Well, welcome to KGNU's Opera Box. I'm your host, Ron Nadel. Tonight's opera playlist is a sort of nouvelle cuisine opera. We're going to hear Gilbert and Sullivan's humorous operetta, The Pirates of Penzance, but in a reduced form. I'm going to present the highlight numbers and fill in the narrative in between so we can cover the entire opera in just 1 hour. And I promise it's organic, gluten-free, low-carb, all-natural, Gilbert and Sullivan. If you're ready, let's begin. The opera begins on a rocky shore off the coast of Cornwall, England. Pirates are drinking and carousing because they're celebrating the coming of age of Frederick, an apprentice pirate who is turning 21, which means he gets released from his apprenticeship duties. But their celebrations are dashed against the rocks when they learn that as an upright young man with a keen sense of duty, Frederick intends to leave them and devote himself to eradicating them as outlaws. It seems that when he was a lad, Frederick's father wanted him to become a ship's pilot in the Merchant Marines. But as his former nursemaid Ruth explains to us, she's hard of hearing and apprenticed him to a pirate instead.
Sweet one, I have long pardoned you.
The two words were so much alike.
They were. They still are, though years have rolled over their heads. But this afternoon, my obligation ceases. Individually, I love you all with affection unspeakable. But collectively, I look upon you with a disgust that amounts to absolute detestation. Oh, pity me, my beloved friends, for such is my sense of duty that once out of my indentures, I shall feel myself bound to devote myself heart and soul to your extermination.
Forland! Forland!
Well, Frederick, if you conscientiously feel that it is your duty to destroy us, we cannot blame you for acting on that conviction. Always act in accordance with the dictates of your conscience, me boy, and chance the consequences.
Besides, we can offer you but little temptation to remain with us. We don't seem to make piracy pay. I'm sure I don't know why, but we don't.
I know why, but alas, I mustn't tell you. It wouldn't be right.
Why not, my boy? It's only 11:30, and you are one of us until the clock strikes 12.
True. And until then, you're bound to protect our interests.
Hear, hear!
Well, then, it is my duty as a pirate to tell you that you are too tender-hearted. For instance, you make a point of never attacking a weaker party than yourselves. And when you attack a stronger party, you invariably get thrashed.
There's some truth in that.
Then again, you make a point of never molesting an orphan.
Of course. We are orphans ourselves and know what it is.
Yes, but it has got about, and what is the consequence? Everyone we capture says he's an orphan. The last three ships we took proved to be manned entirely by orphans, and so we had to let them go. One would think that Great Britain's mercantile navy was recruited solely from her orphan asylums, which we know is not the case.
But hang it all, you wouldn't have us absolutely merciless.
There's my difficulty. Until 12 o'clock I would. After 12 I wouldn't. Was ever a man placed in so delicate a situation?
And Ruth, your own Ruth, whom you love so well, and who has won her middle-aged way into your boyish heart, what is to become of her?
Oh, he will take you with him.
Well, Ruth, I feel some little difficulty about you. It is true that I admire you very much, but I have been constantly at sea since I was 8 years old, and yours is the only woman's face I have seen during that time. I think it is a sweet face.
It is. Oh, it is.
I say I think it is. That is my impression. But as I have never had an opportunity of comparing you with other women, it is just possible I may be mistaken.
True.
What a terrible thing it would be if I were to marry this innocent person and then find out that she is, on the whole, plain.
Oh, Ruth is very well indeed.
Yes. There are the remains of a fine woman about you.
Do you really think so?
I do.
Then I will not be so selfish as to take her from you. In justice to her and in consideration for you, I will leave her behind.
No, Frederick, this must not be. We are rough men who lead a rough life, but we are not so utterly heartless as to deprive thee of thy love. I think I'm right in saying that there is not one here who would rob thee of this inestimable treasure for all the world holds dear.
Not one!
No, I thought there wasn't. Keep thy love, Frederick, keep thy love.
You're very good, I'm sure.
Well, it's the top of the tide, and we must be off. Farewell, Frederick. When your process of extermination begins, let our deaths be as swift and painless as you can conveniently make them.
I will. By the love I have for you, I swear it. Would that you could render this extermination unnecessary by accompanying me back to civilization.
No, Frederick, it cannot be. I don't think much of our profession. But contrasted with respectability, it is comparatively honest. No, Frederick, I shall live and die a pirate king. Oh, better far to live and die under the brave black flag I fly than play a sanctimonious part with a pirate head and a pirate heart. Away to the cheating world go you, where pirates all are well to do, but I'll be true to the song I sing and live and die a pirate king, for I am a pirate king, and it is a glorious thing to be a pirate king, for I am a pirate king, and it
it is a glorious thing to be a pirate king.
It is the love of the pirate king, the love of the pirate king.
When I sallied forth to seek my prey, I helped myself in a royal way. I sink a few more ships, it's true, than a well-bred monarch ought to do. But many a king on a first-class throne, if he wants to call his crown his own, must manage somehow to get through more a dirty work than ever I do. For I am a pirate king, and it is a glorious thing to be a pirate king, for I am a pirate king. It is a glorious thing to be a pirate king.
It is for love the pirate king,
for love the pirate king.
Oh, take me with you. I cannot live if I am left behind.
Ruth, I will be quite candid with you. You are very dear to me, as you know, but I must be circumspect. You see, you are considerably older than I. A lad of 21 usually looks for a wife of 17.
A wife of 17? You will find me a wife of 1,000.
No, but I shall find you a wife of 47, and that is quite enough. Ruth, tell me candidly and without reserve, compared with other women, how are you?
I will answer you truthfully, Master. I have a slight cold, but otherwise I'm quite well.
I'm sorry for your cold. But I was referring rather to your personal appearance. Compared with other women, are you beautiful?
I have been told so, dear Master.
Ah, but lately?
Oh, no, years and years ago.
What do you think of yourself?
It is a delicate question to answer, but I think I'm a fine woman.
That is your candid opinion?
Yes, I should be deceiving you if I told you otherwise.
Thank you, Ruth, I believe you, for I'm sure you would not practice on my inexperience. I wish to do the right thing. And if, I say, if you are really a fine woman, your age shall be no obstacle to our union. Hark! Surely I hear voices. Who has ventured to approach an all but inaccessible lair? Can it be Custom House? No, it does not sound like Custom House.
Confusion! It is the voices of young girls! If he should see them, I am lost!
By all that's marvelous! A bevy of beautiful maidens.
Lost! Lost! Lost!
How lovely! How surpassingly lovely is the plainest of them! What grace, what delicacy, what refinement! And Ruth. Ruth told me she was beautiful.
Frederick is overcome when he sees this bevy of pretty young women. But being naive and inexperienced, he approaches them boldly and declares that he is about to become an ex-pirate, and he finds them all attractive, and then clumsily asks if there is one among them willing to devote herself to him completely. Well, they're all understandably reluctant. All that is but one. Mabel finds his sense of duty attractive, and she's willing to try.
Oh, is there not one maiden breast which does not feel the moral beauty of making love in interest subordinate to sense of duty? Not give up willingly on matrimonial ambition to rescue such an one as I from his unfortunate position, from his position.
then not one maiden here, whose homely face and bad complexion have caused all hope to disappear of ever winning man's affection. To such an one, if such there be, I swear by heaven's arch above you, if you will cast your eyes on me, however plain you be, I love you. Cast your eyes on me, however plain you'll be, I love you, I love you, I love, I love you.
Alas,
Christ,
Well, the sisters don't know what to make of the impetuous Mabel, but they're all interrupted when the band of pirates jump out from behind the rocks and surround the girls with the intentions of forcing the girls to marry them. Mabel gives them a stern warning, however. The pirates better think twice. Their father is a major general who is walking up this very moment.
Hold, monsters! Ere your pirate caravansary proceed against our will to wed us all, just bear in mind that we are wards in chancery and father is a major general.
We'd better pause, or danger may befall. Their father is a major general.
Yes, yes, he is a major general.
Yes, yes, I'm a major general.
For he is a major general.
He is the rather a major general.
And it is a glorious thing to be a major general.
It is for not the major general, for not the major general.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England and Dakota fights historical, from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I am very well acquainted too with matters mathematical. I understand equations both the simple and quadratical. About Polynomial Theorem, I am teeming with a lot of news. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
I am very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beings and animalculus. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, he is the very model of a modern major general.
I know our mythic history, King Arthur's and Sir Caradoc's. I answer hard acrostics, have a pretty taste for paradox. I quote in elegiacs all the crimes of Heliogabalus. In conics, I can flow peculiarities parabolous. I can tell undoubted Raphael some Derrida's and Sophonies. I know the croaking chorus from the frogs of Aristophanes. And I can hum a fugue of which you've heard the music's dinner for. Dinner for. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
Then I can write a washing bill in Babylonic uniform and tell you every detail of Caractacus's uniform. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, he is the very model of a modern major general.
In fact, when I know what is meant by mammalian and ravelin, when I can tell at sight a mouse a rifle from a javelin, when such affairs are sorties and surprises I'm more wary at, and when I know precisely what is meant by commissariat, when I have learned what progress has been made in modern gunnery, when I know more of tactics than a novice in a nunnery, in short, I have a smattering of elemental strategy. Strategy? Strategy, letterage, betterage. I have it. You'll say a better major general and never satirge.
You'll say a better major general and never satirge. You'll say a better major general and never satirge. You'll say a better major general and never satirge.
For my military knowledge, though I am plucky and adventury, has only been but down to the beginning of the century. But still, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
In matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, he is the very model of a modern major general.
Now that I have introduced myself, I should like to have some idea of what's going on.
Oh, Papa.
Permit me. I'll explain in two words. We propose to marry your daughters.
Dear me.
Against our wills, Papa. Against our wills.
Oh, but you mustn't do that. May I ask? This is a picturesque uniform, but I'm not familiar with it. What are you?
We are all single gentlemen.
Yes, I gathered that. Anything else?
No, nothing else.
Papa! Don't believe them. They are pirates. The famous pirates of Penzance.
The pirates of Penzance? I have often heard of them.
All except this gentleman.
who was a pirate once, but who is out of his indentures today, and who means to lead a blameless life evermore.
But wait a bit! I object to pirates as sons-in-law.
We object to major generals as fathers-in-law. But we waive that point. We do not press it. We look over it.
Ah, an idea. And do you mean to say that you would deliberately rob me of these, the sole remaining props of my old age, and leave me to go through the remainder of my life unfriended, unprotected, and alone?
Well, yes, that's the idea.
Tell me, have you ever known what it is to be an orphan?
Oh, that's it all! Here we are again.
I ask you, have you ever known what it is to be an orphan?
Orphan?
Yes, orphan. Have you ever known what it is to be one?
I say orphan.
Orphan, orphan, orphan.
I don't think we quite understand one another. When you said orphan, did you mean orphan a person who has lost his parents, or orphan frequently?
I beg pardon, I see what you mean. Frequently.
You said orphan frequently.
No, only once.
Exactly. You said orphan frequently only once. Of dark and dismal fate, forgo your cruel employ. Have pity on my lonely state. I am an orphan boy.
An orphan boy.
An orphan boy.
How sad.
Children whom you see are all that I can call my own.
Poor fellow.
Take them away from me, and I shall be indeed alone.
Poor fellow.
If pity you can feel, leave me my soul remaining joy. See, at your feet they kneel. Your hearts you cannot steal against the sad, sad tale of a lonely orphan boy.
Poor fellow, see at our feet they kneel, our hearts we cannot steal against the sad, sad tale.
Daughters over the billowy waters. If I hadn't an elegant diction, indulged in an innocent fiction, which is not in the same category as telling a regular terrible story.
Involves a crime of stealing.
So Frederick and Mabel are in love. And Major General Stanley, the very model of a modern Major General, has fooled the pirates, saying that he is an orphan and he's playing on their sympathies. He's telling a terrible story, but it shall not diminish his glory. However, the pirates feel that if he is telling a terrible story, he shall die by a death that is gory. But in Act Two, just as Frederick is now about to leave the pirates and devote himself to their eradication, the Pirate King and Ruth pull him aside. They can't stop from giggling. They've discovered that Frederick is the victim of an innocent paradox. You see, he was apprenticed to them until his 21st birthday. But he was born in leap year, which means his birthday only comes around once every 4 years.
When you had left our pirate fold, we tried to raise a spirit faint according to our custom mold, with quip and quibble quaint. But all in vain the quips we heard. We lay and sobbed upon the rocks, until to somebody occurred a startling paradox.
A paradox.
A paradox, a most ingenious paradox, with quips and quibbles heard in flocks, but none to beat this paradox.
A paradox, a paradox, a most ingenious paradox. This paradox.
Taste for curious quips, for cranks and contradictions queer, and with the laughter on our lips, we wished you there to hear. We said if we could tell it him, how Frederick would the joke enjoy. And so we risked both life and limb to tell it to our boy.
That paradox.
That paradox, that most ingenious paradox, with quips and quibbles heard in flocks, but none to beat that paradox.
A paradox, a paradox, a most ingenious paradox. That paradox.
For some ridiculous reason, to which, however, I've no desire to be disloyal, some person in authority, I don't know who, very likely the Astronomer Royal, has decided that, although for such a beastly month as February, 28 days, as a rule, are plenty, 1 year in every 4, his days shall be reckoned as 29. Some singular coincidence, I shouldn't be surprised if it were owing to the agency of an ill-natured fairy. You are the victim of this clumsy arrangement, having been born in leap year on the 29th of February. And so, by a simple arithmetical process, you'll easily discover that though you've lived 21 years, yet if we go by birthdays, you're only 5 and a little bit over.
Dear me, let's see. Yes, yes, we've got my figures to agree. How quaint the ways of paradox. At common sense she gaily mocks, though counting in the usual way is 21 I've been alive. Yet reckoning by my natal day, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I am a little boy of 5.
He is a little boy of 5.
A paradox, a purest paradox, a most ingenious paradox. Upon my word, this is most curious, most absurdly whimsical. 5 1/4. No one would think it to look at me. You are glad now, I'll be bound, that you spared us. You would never have forgiven yourself when you discovered that you had killed two of your comrades.
My comrades?
I'm afraid you don't appreciate the delicacy of your position. You were apprentice to us.
Until I reach my 21st year.
No, until you reach your 21st birthday. And going by birthdays, you are as yet only 5 1/4.
You don't mean to say you're going to hold me to that?
No, we merely remind you of the fact and leave the rest to your sense of duty.
Your sense of duty?
Don't put it on that footing. As I was merciful to you just now, be merciful to me. I implore you not to insist on a letter of your bond, just as a cup of happiness is at my lips.
We insist on nothing. We content ourselves with pointing out to you your duty.
Your duty?
Well, you have appealed to my sense of duty, and my duty is only too clear. I abhor your infamous calling. I shudder at the thought that I have ever been mixed up with it. But duty's before all, and at any price, I will do my duty.
Bravely spoken. Come, you are one of us once more.
Lead on, I follow. Oh, horror!
What's the matter?
What did I tell you? Oh, no, no, I cannot do it. And yet, as one of your band...
Speak out! I charge you by that sense of conscientiousness to which we have never yet appealed in vain.
General Stanley?
Yes.
The father of my Mabel?
Yes, yes.
He escaped from you on the plea that he was an orphan.
He did.
It breaks my heart to betray the honored father of the girl I adore. But as your apprentice, I have no alternative. It is my duty to tell you...
Yes.
...that General Stanley...
Yes, yes.
...is no orphan.
What?
More than that, he never was one.
Am I to understand that to save his contemptible life, he dared to practice on our credulous simplicity? Our revenge shall be swift and terrible. We will go and collect our band and attack Tomorden Castle this very night.
But stay.
Not a word. He is doomed.
The pirates now know that Major Stanley has lied to them, and Frederick must help the pirates have their revenge. Not only that, he must tell Mabel they cannot marry until his 21st birthday.
Great. And
In 1940 I of age shall be. I'll then return and claim you, I declare it.
It seems so long.
Swear that till then you'll be true to me.
Yes, I'll be strong. By all the Stanley's dead and gone, I swear.
Mabel swears to be faithful and wait for Frederick. But in the meantime, the major and his daughters are expecting the local constabulary to attack and defeat the pirates. But the police are reluctant because when a felon's not engaged in his employment, he's just the same as any honest man. Even so, the pirates have armed themselves and they are sneaking up on Major General's home with cat-like tread, just as the Major General comes out in his nightshirt. His guilty conscience won't let him sleep for lying to the pirates. His daughters all come out after him, just as the pirates pounce on them all. Seeing Frederick there, they all think that they're saved, but he is a pirate himself. The police arrive, but they are instantly unarmed by the pirates. All seems lost, until the constable demands that the pirates yield in the name of the queen. Their love for the queen is strong, and the pirates do surrender. But before they can be taken away, Ruth has one more surprise that saves the day.
When a felon's not engaged in his employment, or maturing his felonious little plans, his capacity for innocent enjoyment, is just as great as any honest man's. Our feelings we with difficulty smother, when constabulary duties to be done, take one consideration with another. A policeman's lot is not a happy one. When constabulary duties to be done, a policeman's lot is not a happy one. Happy one.
When the enterprising burglar's not a burgling, when the cutthroat isn't occupied in crime, he loves to hear the little brook a gurgling, and listen to the merry village chime.
When the coster's finished jumping on his mother,
he loves to lie a basking in the sun.
Take one consideration with another. A policeman's lot is not a nappy one.
When constabulary duties to be done, a policeman's lot is not a nappy.
Thank you.
gentle bit, your life preserve. You may want to hit your silent matches, your dark lantern seas. Take your file and your skeletonic keys.
Inside, the Major General comes, so quickly hide.
Yes, yes, the Major General comes.
Yes, yes, the Major General comes.
Yes, yes, the Major General comes. Tormented with the anguished dread of falsehood unatoned, I lay upon my sleepless bed and tossed and turned and groaned. The man who finds his conscience ache, no peace at all enjoys. And as I lay in bed awake, I thought I heard a noise.
He thought he heard a noise.
Ha!
No. Still, in dale on hill, my mind is set at ease. So still the scene, it must have been the sighing of the softly to the river comes the loving breeze, setting nature all a quiver, rustling through the trees. And the brook in rippling measure laughs for very love, while the poplars in their pleasure wave their arms above. Frederick here? Oh, joy, oh, rapture, summon your men and effect their capture.
Frederick, save us!
Beautiful Mabel, I would if I could, but I am not able.
He's telling a fool, he is not able.
With base deceit, you worked upon our feelings. The event is sweet and flavors all our dealings. With courage rare and resolution manly, for death prepare, unhappy General Stanley.
Is he to die and shriven on a kneel?
Who's him?
Well known in his cause, a weapon wheel.
Who's him?
Yes, we are here, though hither to conceal.
Contrived, but your proud triumph will not be long-lived. Don't say you're orphans, for we know that game. On your allegiance we've a stronger claim. We charge your yield. We charge you yield in Queen.
Oh,
The Pirates of Penzance by Gilbert and Sullivan. We heard John Reed as the Major General and Valerie Masterson as Mabel and Paul Potter as Frederick. Isidore Godfrey conducted the Doily Cart Opera Company. Well, I hope you enjoyed our Nouvelle Cuisine Opera. We'll have more in the future, condensing these great operas into a one-hour program. Right now, it's a minute after 8 o'clock here at KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM, 93.7 FM in Nederland, and live online at kgnu.org. And the classical music continues with A Classic Monday. Welcome to KGNU's Classic Monday. Welcome, everybody. I'm Ron Nadel, your KGNU classical music host. Tonight, the music in my playlist is classical music performed by the composers themselves, with recordings such as this one with Richard Strauss's tone poem, Don Juan, conducted by the composer in 1944. I've also got music of Igor Stravinsky and Sergei Rachmaninoff, with Rachmaninoff performing his own music, and more. So cozy up to your radio or your computer and join me for music performed by the composers with their own two hands.